Now let's look at the relationship between the design of a story and its setting. The setting of a story is four-dimensional, two dimensions of time, two dimensions of space. Period, the first dimension of time. Is the story set in a contemporary world, a historical period, a hypothetical future? Duration, the second dimension of time. How much time does the story span within the lives of your characters? Decades, years, months, days. Location, the first dimension of space. What is the story's specific geography? In what town? On what streets? What buildings on those streets? What rooms inside those buildings? Up what mountain? Across what desert? Levels of conflict, the second dimension of space. At what level of conflict do you pitch your telling? No matter how externalized in institutions or internalized in individuals, the political, economic, ideological, biological, and psychological forces of society shape events as much as period, landscape, or costume. Therefore, the cast of characters, containing its various levels of conflict, from the subconscious mind to galactic war, is part of a story setting. These four corners, period in time, location in space, duration through time, and the level or levels of conflict, square off the setting of your story. And the relationship between your story's event design and its setting is that the setting sharply defines and limits what is possible within the telling. Although your setting is a fiction, not everything that comes to mind may be allowed to happen in it. Within any world, no matter how fantasied, only certain events are possible or probable. At first, this principle seems negative, for creative people often resist the notion of limitations. But remember, by the time modern filmgoers sit down to your work, they've absorbed tens of thousands of hours of TV, movies, prose, and theater. What will you create that they haven't seen before? Where will you find a truly original story? How will you win the war on clichés? Cliché is at the root of audience dissatisfaction, and like a plague spread through ignorance, they now infect all story media. The cause of this worldwide epidemic is simple and clear. The writer does not know the world of his story. Knowledge of and insight into the world of your story is fundamental to the achievement of originality and excellence. Therefore, the first step toward a well-told story is to create a knowable world. Limitation is a vital stimulus to creativity. If your setting spans too much time and space, too much society, too many characters, your knowledge will be stretched thin and your event choices clichéd. Understanding this principle, all great storytellers have confined the scope of their settings to what an artist's mind could absorb in godlike depth and detail. War and Peace, although told against the landscape of Russia in turmoil, is in fact the narrowly focused tale of a handful of characters from two interrelated families. Crime and Punishment is microscopic. A small world does not mean a trivial world. Art consists of separating one tiny piece from the rest of the universe and holding it up in such a way that it appears to be the most important, fascinating thing of this moment. The smaller the world, the more complete the knowledge of the writer, therefore the greater his creative choices. Result? A fully original story and a victory in the war on cliché. Now, let's turn to the relationship of story design to story type, or genre. One of your first steps is to identify the genre or combination of genres governing your work. Here is a genre system used by screenwriters. It's a system that separates story types by their subjects, settings, roles, and/or values. The love story. Its subgenre, buddy salvation, substitutes friendship for romantic love. Mean Streets, Passion Fish, Romy and Michelle's high school reunion, the horror film. It has three subgenres: supernatural, in which the source of horror is from the spirit realm, The Exorcist; uncanny, in which the source of horror is, in some sense, scientifically explainable, Alien; and super uncanny, in which we keep the audience guessing as to which it is. For example, is the protagonist a madman, or is he haunted by demons? The Tenant, The Shining, for examples. The modern epic, in which an individual battles the state. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Spartacus, The People versus Larry Flint. The Western. The war genre. Although war is often the setting for another genre, such as the love story, the war genre is specifically about combat. The maturation plot, or coming-of-age story, Stand By Me, Risky Business, Big. The redemption plot, a bad guy turns good, The Hustler, Lord Jim, Drugstore Cowboy, Schindler's List. The punitive plot, a good guy turns bad and is punished, Greed, Mephisto, Wall Street, Falling Down. The testing plot, in which a character is constantly tempted to surrender his values or courage, The Old Man and the Sea, Cool Hand Luke, Forrest Gump. The education plot turns on a deep change within the protagonist's view of either life, of people, or self, from the negative to the positive, Harold and Maude, Tender Mercies, My Best Friend's Wedding. The disillusionment plot, it turns on a deep change of worldview from the positive to the negative, Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle. Some genres are mega-genres. Comedy, crime, social drama, action-adventure are so large and complex that they're filled with numerous sub-genre variations on the mother theme. Taking a still wider view, if you take the genres I've listed and reset them in a unique location of time, or base them on fact, or treat them with a special style of presentation, they become historical drama, biography, docudrama, mockumentary, the musical, science fiction, the sports genre, fantasy, and animation. And lastly, for those who believe that genres and their conventions are concerns of commercial writers only, and that serious art is non-generic, let me add one last name to the list: the art film, which could begin with any of the genres I've mentioned, but has now given a new convention. The story design itself must be unconventional, mini-plotted or anti-plotted. Although this slate is reasonably comprehensive, no list can ever be definitive or exhaustive, because the lines between genres often overlap as they influence and merge with one another. Yet they're firm and stable enough to be identified and worked with, much as a composer plays with the malleable movements of musical genres. A writer's homework is to first identify his genre, then research its governing practices. Each genre imposes conventions on story design, conventional value changes at climax, such as the down ending of the disillusionment plot, conventional settings, such as the Western, conventional events such as boy meets girl in the love story, conventional roles such as the criminal in a crime story. The audience knows these conventions and expects to see them fulfilled. Consequently, the choice of genre sharply determines and limits what's possible within a story, as its design must envision the audience's knowledge and anticipations of convention. Each genre has unique conventions, but in some, these are relatively uncomplicated and pliable. The disillusionment plot. Its primary convention is a protagonist who opens the story filled with optimism, who holds high ideals or beliefs, whose view of life is positive. Its second convention is a pattern of repeatedly negative story turns that may at first raise his hopes, but ultimately poison his dreams and values, leaving him deeply cynical and disillusioned. The protagonist of The Conversation, for example, begins with an orderly, secure hold on life and ends in paranoid nightmare. This simple set of conventions offers uncountable possibilities, for life knows a thousand paths to hopelessness. Among the many memorable films in this genre are The Misfits, La Dolce Vita, Lenny. Other genres are relatively inflexible and filled with a complex of rigid conventions. The crime genre. There must be a crime. It must happen early in the telling. There must be a detective character, professional or amateur, who discovers clues and suspects. In the subgenre of the thriller, the criminal must make it personal. Although the story may start with a cop who works for a paycheck, to deepen the drama, at some point, the criminal goes over the line. Clichés grow like fungus around this convention. The criminal menaces the family of the cop, or turns the cop himself into a suspect, or, cliché of clichés, with roots going back to the Maltese Falcon, he kills the detective's partner. Ultimately, the cop must identify, apprehend, and punish the criminal. Comedy contains myriad subgenres as well, each with its own conventions. But one overriding convention unites this megagenre and distinguishes it from drama. Nobody gets hurt. In comedy, the audience must feel that no matter how characters bounce off walls, no matter how they scream and writhe under the whips of life, it doesn't really hurt. Buildings may fall on Laurel and Hardy, but they get up out of the rubble, dust themselves off, mutter, "Now what a fine mess," and on they go. Art films are conventionalized by a number of external practices, such as the absence of stars, production outside the Hollywood system, generally a language other than English, all of which become sales points as the marketing team encourages critics to champion the film as an underdog. But its primary internal conventions are, firstly, a celebration of the cerebral. The art film favors the intellect by smothering strong emotion under a blanket of mood, while through enigma, symbolism, and/or unresolved tensions, it invites interpretation and analysis in the post-film ritual of café criticism. Secondly, and essentially, the story design of an art film depends on one grand convention, unconventionality. Minimalist and/or anti-structured unconventionality is the art film's distinguishing convention. Success in the art film genre usually results in instant, although often temporary, recognition as an artist. On the other hand, the durable Alfred Hitchcock worked solely within the arc plot and genre convention, always aimed for a mass audience and habitually founded. Yet today he stands atop the pantheon of filmmakers, worshipped worldwide as one of the century's major artists, a film poet whose works resonate with sublime images of sexuality, religiosity, and subtleties of point of view. Hitchcock knew that there is no necessary contradiction between art and popular success, nor a necessary connection between art and the art film. Genre convention is a creative limitation that forces the writer's imagination to rise to the occasion. Rather than deny convention and flatten the story, a fine writer calls on conventions like old friends, knowing that in the struggle to fulfill them in a unique way, he may find inspiration for the scenes that will lift his story above the ordinary. Genres are frequently combined to resonate meaning, to enrich character, and to create varieties of mood and emotion. A love story subplot, for example, finds its way inside almost any crime story. The Fisher King wove 5 threads: redemption plot, psychodrama, love story, social drama, comedy, into an excellent film. The musical horror film was a delicious invention. Given the 24 principal genres, possibilities for inventive crossbreeding are endless. In this way, the writer in command of genre may create a type of film the world has never seen. For innovative writers are not only contemporary, they are visionary. They know that the attitudes in society and the world around us change, slowly perhaps, but evolving nonetheless. Story genres, as a result, are not static or rigid, but flexible and mutable. They're simply 24 different ways of looking at reality. As the world we see through the lens of genre changes, the width and focus of the lens, the genre and its conventions, changes with it. And so fine writers keep their ear to the wall of history. And as things change, they can sense the way society is leaning toward the future. They then produce works that break convention and take the genres into their next generation. This, for example, is one of the many beauties of Chinatown. In the climax of all previous murder mysteries, the detective was required to apprehend and punish the criminal. But Chinatown's wealthy and politically powerful killer gets away with it, breaking that honored convention. This film could not have been made, however, until the 1970s, when the Civil Rights Movement, Watergate, and the Vietnam War woke America up to the depth of its corruption, and the nation realized that indeed the rich were getting away with murder and much more. Chinatown rewrote the genre, opening the door to down-ending crime stories such as Body Heat, Crimes and Misdemeanors, Q&A, Basic Instinct, The Last Seduction, Seven. Mastery of genre is essential for yet one more reason. Screenwriting is not for sprinters, but long-distance runners. No matter what you've heard about scripts dashed off over a weekend at poolside, from first inspiration to last polished draft, a quality screenplay consumes 6 months, 9 months, a year, or more. Writing a film demands the same creative labor in terms of world, character, and story as a 400-page novel. The only substantive difference is the number of words used in the telling. A screenplay's painstaking economy of language demands sweat and time, while the freedom to fill pages with prose often makes writing easier, even faster. All writing is discipline, but screenwriting is a drill sergeant. Ask yourself, therefore, what will keep your desire burning over those many months? Generally, great writers tightly focus their careers on one idea, a single subject that ignites their passion, a subject that they can pursue with beautiful variation through a lifetime of work. Therefore, be honest in your choice of genre and write in the genre you love. For of all the reasons for wanting to write, the only one that nurtures us through time is love of the work itself.